On the Other Hand, by Braver Angels, Arkansas.
So hello and welcome to On the Other Hand, in which we seek to explore politics and other issues of importance to our community in Central Arkansas through having conversations with various community leaders. Today we're picking up on the second part of our conversation with Kwame Abdul-Bey, who is a very active local community leader and is working in the area of social justice. And in fact, he calls himself a social justice policy entrepreneur. So tune in to hear our second episode of On the Other Hand with Kwame.
And you'll be hearing from us, Glenn White, along with my co-host,
April Chatham Carpenter.
Okay, stay tuned.
So do you have any other, I'd love to hear an example of a time in which you've worked across, you know, differences to actually make a difference in the community?
Well, what I'm doing right now, like I said, I am a social justice policy entrepreneur. So for the last two legislative sessions, I've been a legislation drafter, and I've drafted at least about a dozen pieces of legislation. I haven't gotten one passed yet that I actually authored, but these different pieces of legislation deal with social justice issues, because I try to explain to people that we all have the same problems. We all, our dollars don't make it to the next payday. We all need to put gas in our car. We all need to feed the dog, the cat, or the children, or whoever that comforts us when we come home. So since we all have these same human characteristics, then there's a way that we can create legislation that deals with the, like I said, the general welfare, general safety, the general protection of all the people. And that's actually written in Arkansas Constitution, that all laws must be written according to those principles, but that doesn't necessarily happen these days. But in writing the legislation, I always try to write legislation where it benefits everyone. You know, it benefits everyone if we can all not have to be even susceptible to the discretion of a police officer that's pulling us over for a traffic stop, or on whether or not we're arrested and taken to jail on a misdemeanor. So, you know, I write legislation on bail reform to abolish bail for all misdemeanor offenses. When I took the legislation before the committee to testify, you know, that's the first thing that certain red legislators would insinuate that you're writing this for a certain segment of the population, particularly the segment of the population that looks like me. And then I'm like, no, well, if you look at the statistics, the people that's going to jail and they can't get out and losing their jobs and being messed up are actually poor white people. In Southern Arkansas and in the hills of Northern Arkansas. So I like to deal with situations when we're dealing with social justice issues, is deal with situations that from a standpoint that this is a win-win situation for everyone. Now, some people may get more out of it than others, but that's because of their certain situation in life. Because they may be in a different zip code, they may be in a different profession, they may be in a different skin color, But all in all, I want policy that is beneficial to all Arkansans. So that's the thing that really is driving me and has driven me for the last 3-4 years. And, you know, once I get that law degree, I'll actually be taken more seriously when I try to do this. Right now, they look at me like, oh, wait a minute, who are you again?
Looking forward to some of those things, getting past that committee level. That would be great for you and the work that you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, one thing, I get to test my theories this summer because there's a Clinton School alum that's going to launch the first ever Arkansas Collegiate Model State Government this summer. And so I'm going to be a student state senator, and all of the bills that I've written that can't get out of committee, I'm ramming them through this summer. So hopefully you'll be reading about it in the Arkansas Democratic Gazette, that there's this crazy state senator that's just ramming everything through.
Maybe it'll be a rehearsal for the real thing later.
Yeah, rehearsal for the real thing, indeed. The thing is in writing this legislation, one thing that I've done in order to make sure that I can write legislation that deals with the focus that I just stated, is I hooked up with Ryan Norris. You know, since Ryan Norris's organization represents, you know, really red thought patterns and politicians here in the state of Arkansas, I thought it would be very important that I was able to get his input on a lot of the things that I've written, and we've become really good friends. And he's actually introduced me to several people that are beneficial in this line of work that I'm doing. So that's one thing that's been very helpful, is me being able to cross the aisle and work with reds, work with blues, work with purples, and just make sure, hey, you know, this is about all of us, not just some of us.
Yeah, we interviewed Ryan in our last show, and he was giving us examples of the work that he does. And boy, he is really trying to bring people across to work together on specific issues, and has had some success.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yes. So, yeah, he and I do a lot of work together.
Glenn, I know you wanted to ask Kwame about another politician that's had some success. I guess Ryan maybe doesn't consider himself a politician, but you want to ask him about his recent visit with Jesse Jackson?
I was curious about that because, you know, Kwame, we were already planning to interview you, and we had plenty of ideas of, you know, what you might talk about and what we might ask you about. And then I pick up the newspaper one morning and read it, and there you are talking, or maybe it was on Facebook, I don't remember, social media somewhere, but you talked about having been contacted by the Reverend Jesse Jackson, and he was going to be visiting Little Rock in early April. That time has recently come and gone. Could you tell us a little bit about the time you spent with him, how that developed, and the role that you played?
Yeah, it was actually very interesting that I got a call from his people just saying, and the phone call was really simple. I pick up the phone and I say, hello. Then they say, is this Kwame Abdul-Bey? I'm like, yes. Hold on, Reverend Jackson wants to speak with you. I'm like, huh? What? I don't know Reverend Jackson. Then when he gets on the phone and I'm listening to him, I'm like, wait a minute, this is Jesse Jackson. And, you know, he told me that he was coming to Little Rock, coming to Arkansas, because he was in Fayetteville, he was in Hot Springs, and also in Little Rock. and in Benton as well. So he was in four different places, but he was coming to Arkansas and that he wanted me to work with him and his people to get a couple of things done and set up a couple of meetings with different legislators and community organizations and everything. And I did that. I spent several days talking with him on the phone about how this would look. And I set up, I helped coordinate and set up a lot of different meetings with him. And I actually spent the whole day, all day Saturday with him, actually just doing a lot of strategizing. You know, he said, well, the data shows that the problem here in Arkansas is that you have registered voters that don't vote. And I'm like, yep, that is the very big problem. He said, Arkansas has the largest number of registered voters that don't vote. And we need to change that. And I'm like, okay, definitely, I'm going to change that. I'm going to work with you to change that. Another thing that we lack in Arkansas is resources. So if we could work on getting some resources to fund programs that will increase the percentage of registered voters that actually vote, then we could actually get something done. So that's what we're working on right now. We're trying to figure out exactly how to do that. He's going to make some telephone calls, and I'll be going up to Chicago sometime in the next several months to do some more meetings so that we can move forward with that. But again, it was not a red thing. It wasn't a blue thing. It was a registered voters aren't voting, and we need to change that around.
Okay. So I was going to, you talked about it wasn't a red or a blue thing. So I was wondering, you know, in our work in Braver Angels, you know, we talk about reaching out across the aisle, and you know there are plenty of people whose impression of Jesse Jackson and others like him would be very much blue and not at all reaching across the aisle. So I wonder if you could tell us ways in which you heard some of that reaching out and the ability or willingness to find that common thread that you've talked about before with him, or anything you're aware of that he's done in the past or might be planning?
Well, you do know that he is the founder of the Rainbow Coalition. And even the history of the original Rainbow Coalition that predated his founding of the current Rainbow Coalition, it was an opportunity for people of all different backgrounds and persuasions to come together under one umbrella. And that's what the Rainbow Coalition is all about. And that's something that he's stayed true to. The way that he spoke when he was running for president in the 80s, he still speaks that same exact way. Which I found to be very impressive because, you know, I thought that I was going to encounter some old tired man, and he's not old and he's not tired. he might be slower, but he's, you know, still the same brilliant mind that he was way back when. And so, that's, you know, even when we talk about the permanent interest versus permanent friends, that's something that we talked about when we were together, about the importance of us working not necessarily to elect blue candidates, but to elect candidates that are more interested in doing what the people feel that is needed versus going in with, you know, agendas, hidden or otherwise. So that's one thing that that he was very interested in helping us do, is making sure that we get people on the ballot and people in office that are going to be a heck of a lot more responsive to the general public versus a small segment, because right now we have a lot of because we are a state that has the lowest number of registered voters that actually vote, what we have is we have a lot of people that are elected in office that are put in office by a very slim, small majority of people. You have some legislators right now that they're in office because 15 people voted for them. And that's a really big problem, because what we need is we need all of the peoples to put their two cents in on what we want our government to look like. And once everybody's voice is counted, I think we have a more robust, a more responsive, and a more integral legislature, executive, and judicial branch.
Makes sense. One of the things in Braver Angels that we talk about is reaching across the aisle, just like you did that day at the Denny's, in a way. But a lot of people, one of the senses I get when I hear this a lot is a lot of people are afraid to reach across the aisle. And that's talking about politics. Now, as an African-American man, I know, and you've been active in racial justice issues, I know that you have, and you've described it so far, some of the things you've encountered in your life. So I wonder if you can use some of your experiences and the journey that you've made about how you deal with knowing some people have extreme views that are antithetical to your own views and actions, that are really hostile toward you and those who look like you, because I think some of those same learnings that you may have developed could be helpful for people in other areas. Let's say if they're wanting to reach out to someone with another political view or something like that, but are afraid to do so.
I don't really call myself someone that that is an advocate for racial justice. I like to use social justice with a racial equity lens, because we all deserve justice no matter what our race is. And we're all social humans. So everyone requires justice, and they require it to be equitably distributed. As far as being afraid, particularly when we talk about politics, to reach across the aisle, I tell people very simply, like, no one put a gun to your head and forced you when you registered to vote to check a box that you were a Democrat, to check a box that you were a Republican. That was a volunteer effort. It wasn't something that you were forced to do, and you could easily go down to the county clerk's office today and fill out a new card and check a new box. So your political persuasion is your choice. When we get that clear, that's what you've chosen to do. The minority leader in the Senate, he had an interview with Axios Media. This was 2 weeks ago. And they asked him about January 6th, and they asked him about a lot of the things that are going on in the Republican Party. And they asked him what was his moral compass.
Mitch McConnell,
about yes. These things that was coming up. And his response was basically that he can't do anything about it. I'm like, what you can do, and you chose to be a Republican. So choose to do something about it. Choose to have a moral compass. And that's not to say that the Republicans have the big share of having a lack of moral compass. The Democrats are as hypocritical as Republicans, and I'm not talking about them as a whole. I'm talking about certain people that call themselves Democrat or Republican. But what we have to do is we have to realize that, okay, you can choose your political party, but can that person that you are creating policies and practices against, can they choose their race? Can they choose their poverty? Can they choose their social circumstances? And you might say, yes, they can, but it's a little bit harder than just checking a box on your voter registration. So once we agree that we're all humans, and secondly, that we have the ability to make choices, and some have the ability to make choices more than others, then we can realize that, hey, we're all in this together. Because if World War III breaks out, which people are saying that it's supposed to be breaking out within the next year or so, we all live on this same planet, and we all have to take care of each other, and we all have to live with each other. And that's how we need to look at it. And there's no reason why I should drive down one neighborhood in Little Rock and it looks like a bomb was dropped on it, and then just four blocks over, I go into another neighborhood and it looks like I just stepped into heaven or something like that. We need to spread equitably the resources so that all can enjoy to the fullest of their ability the good life. And that requires us to get beyond and above any political designations that will prevent us from being the braver angels that we all need to be. The short answer to your question is we need to put on our big girl panties and our big girl underwear, and let's start being adults about this, and let's start realizing that we have nobody to blame but ourselves.
Interesting. That reminds me of the university at University of Arkansas at Little Rock had Heather McGee. It reminds me of her. I've actually started listening to her book on from the Cal's Library, checking it out online, but was able to listen to her presentation, and it really has challenged me in some of my own thoughts and beliefs. And that's one of the things that I have gained from Braver Angels, is this sense of needing intellectual humility.
Yes. You
know, realizing there are things that I don't know that I need to learn about, and being able to learn from people who I wouldn't normally maybe have thought I should listen to, or maybe I was taught I couldn't listen to, but that's not true, because we all have choices.
I want to speak to what you just said, because one of the most profound things in my opinion that she said was that up until the late 60s, they said the majority of white Americans that were polled believed that there should be a free college education, that everyone should be guaranteed a job, and that there should be unions, and all of these things that are now associated with being a quote-unquote blue, that the majority of Americans polled believed that, until people that look like me started going after that. And then in the 70s, it flipped where most white Americans polled believe that there should not be free college education. There should not be guaranteed jobs. There should not be a minimum livable wage. And that is a very sad commentary. Very sad commentary that we today have such an opportunity to begin fixing the things that our forebears may have done because they did not exercise the intellectual humility of which you speak. And we all have an opportunity to exercise that here and today, and we can do it together. And it's not going to be a comfortable transition. It's not going to be comfortable at all. When I went and knocked on that door on that Wednesday at the Denny's, that was not comfortable. I was scared shitless, but I did it. And, you know, we all have to do it, and we all have to be braver angels. And the angel part tells us, when we talk about intellectual humility, the angel part I interpret it as being, I've always been told that angels are the guardians of humanity. And if we are braver angels, then we have to be the guardians of these humans that we live with. And I think that's a really good beginning to go down this road that we need to go down.
It's a powerful image. I hadn't thought about it in that way. That's awesome. Well, you kind of were moving into what I wanted to do as a wrap up in terms of recommendations for all of us to help us move towards, you know, this willingness to work and collaborate. So what recommendations do you have for people who are interested in increasing their interaction with people of different views and working together with others to be guardians of humanity?
Well, I definitely would suggest that everybody that hears this, they immediately go to the Braver Angels website, and they immediately go to the Coming to the Table website. Go Google Braver Angels, go Google Coming to the Table. It's our civic responsibility. Participatory government starts with us all participating. So you definitely want to definitely look into participatory governance. At the Clinton School, there's a lot of good things that are going on with participatory governments. The Winthrop Rockefeller Institute, there's a lot of good things that's going on there. You mentioned COWS earlier, and go and get the book. There's a lot of good things that COWS is doing. And General Wesley Clark, he has his organization that you want to get involved with. Matter of fact, I'll be going to his training this summer that he's doing. And Jim Hendren has his organization. If we could just get him to answer the damn phone.
I can relate to that.
But, you know, he has his organization, Common Ground. So we have all these opportunities. So there's no need to reinvent the wheel. We just need to jump on board. And, talking about UALR, over at UALR, they have the Little Rock Little Rock Congregation Study that they're doing, and I'm one of the graduate students that's working on that. And so we're creating a framework, just as Braver Angels does it on the political tip, and Coming to the Table does it on the racial tip. The Little Rock Congregation Study is trying to create a framework to do it on the religious tip, bringing Black churches and white churches together to start this process as well, because you know, getting to that angel part again, you know, we're in the Bible Belt. And in the Bible Belt, we take our religion seriously, particularly if we're of the Christian persuasion. So we need to start reading our scriptures and asking ourselves, what would Jesus do? Jesus wouldn't do what Mitch McConnell did, and he wouldn't say what Mitch McConnell said. He'd do and say something totally different. So, you know, let's get our guidance from those angels and those saints and those higher powers that, you know, can really guide us and give us the principles and the values that we need moving forward.
I mean, woohoo. I'm just thinking about as you're talking. I mean, Jesus upended the whole political system and religious system that he found himself in. So, Glenn, what's a takeaway today from as we get ready to end the session? What's a takeaway?
Well, my first reaction, you talk about Jesus' essential message and following that, which I think you're totally right about, and I agree. However, I want to also add that, you know, Braver Angels looks at, you know, people from all walks of life, those with different religious beliefs and those who have no religious beliefs, because, you know, we all have some, to some degree, call them principles, call them values, whatever you will, but that's part of what guides our behavior, and you don't necessarily have to be a member of an identified church or religion to have, you know, good, positive principles or values that guide you. And I think that's just one of the things I keep hearing you saying, is that we need to be guided by our principles and the higher calling of us as human beings. And I totally agree with that. So that's one of the key things I think about. But there's a lot to learn, even if you're not following a particular religion or a religious teacher, there's a lot to learn from those, or whether you get it from philosophers or wherever. There's a lot of good that helps us guide toward a better level of humanity, and that's what we hope to accomplish. And we really appreciate your having talked to us today on that.
Well, one thing that that the Summer of Resistance of 2020 has really brought to the forefront is the importance of us recognizing that we are currently on land that was acquired by nefarious means. Mm-hmm. And in doing that land acknowledgement, it gives us an opportunity to incorporate some of the principles of our indigenous brethren. And one of the most powerful principles that Native Americans, no matter what nation that they're on, they all have the seven generations principle, that everything that you do today, you must keep in mind how it will affect the next seven generations. So it's like a pebble effect. Everything that you do today has a rippling effect. It's like dropping a pebble in a pond, and it's going to affect not only you, but your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, your great-great-great-grandchildren. So what are we doing today, and how is that affecting the next seven generations?
That is long-term thinking, and I totally agree. We do so much short-term thinking, and that's a problem. April, I'd like to find out from you, what was your takeaway?
My takeaway is the through line, finding the through line in our stories. I love that. And also the guardians of humanity, the thinking of, you know, and it takes bravery to do it, but wherever we are, we can make choices that can actually make things better, one relationship at a time.
One relationship at a time. Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much for being here with us, Kwame. It was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, we really appreciate our listeners for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. We have finished our second discussion today on this podcast with Kwame Abdel-Bey. Kwame has worked with lots of organizations to bring communities together, including the Arkansas Peace and Justice Memorial Movement, and coming to the table. So be sure to check out this and the first episode, if you haven't already listened to it, on our Braver Angels Arkansas website. And that can be found at arkansas.braverangels.org under the podcast drop down there. So arkansas.braverangels.org.
And thank you. I hope you enjoyed the stories you heard from Kwame today. I found them really interesting, fascinating, and really lets us know something about the people that are working for the common good in our community. Now, if you like that, or if you had some other ideas, be sure to let us know. Send us feedback by going to that website, arkansas.braverangels.org, and click on the link for the email to otherhandar@gmail.com, and that will take you to us. We'll look at your email. If you have any suggestions for improvement, speakers, topics, whatever feedback you have, we would appreciate hearing from you on that. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, April Chatham Carpenter,
and Glenn White,
have a good evening, and let's all work to bring our community closer together.